Greetings and welcome to Trottle Up. This is a radio show and podcast that showcases critical thinking and complex problem solving. And it is designed to inform, delimit, empower, and amaze. Now, all aboard the Trottle Up Express, powered by High Velocity Reason, and I am your host, Captain Kevin Smith, U.S. Navy retired. Now, I'm a naval aviator and former squadron commander and Top Gun instructor as a naval aviator. And also, I'm a pioneer in the field of some aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving, and of course, high velocity reason. Now, our tagline for the show is to accelerate beyond the ordinary. So we could say that we are not ordinary thinkers, you and I, but we are different and we are out of the box thinkers. Our motto for the show is to employ high velocity reason to achieve high octane performance. And in a nutshell, that basically means to stay out ahead of the problem. That's particularly important if we want to achieve success. Now, our mission statement for the show, and this changes a little bit from time to time, but this is a pretty good mission statement, is to provide our listening audience with a relatively easy yet effective way to strengthen our power of reason through the employment of critical thinking. Now, our website, the address here is throttleupradio.com. That's throttleupradio.com. That's the address for the website. And before we close on our introduction, I wanted to say that our audio engineering services provided by Evergroove Studios, and they are located in Evergreen, Colorado, which is right outside of Denver on the west side. Highly recommend their services for anyone who wants to get involved with audio. It could be any kind of audio that you might have in mind, including music, by the way. Also, graphics artist services and media support is provided by Reflections Printing. And the gal is Jennifer. She heads up this organization, and she owns it as well. And Jennifer does a great job with all of our media support, is a fantastic graphics artist and media production specialist. And her phone number is 435-574-0422. That's 435-574-0422. And before we close the introduction, I want to say that the show is typically organized into three parts. So part one of Throttle Up is critical thinking, or an ongoing discussion of various aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving. Part two is our storyboard, and the storyboard is a story of America or a story of Americans, story of an individual. It could be any kind of story, but it all relates to trying to get our arms around this whole thing, which we call critical thinking and complex problem solving. And then part three is our radio essay. Now, a radio essay is typically a little bit more in-depth treatment of a particular subject. We do not intend for this to be boring, but for those who would like a little bit more info on certain things that we cover in part one and part two, then part three typically is a way for us to get a little bit further into a subject matter and understand it better. Okay, all aboard the Throttle Up Express. This is a place where all critical thinkers and complex problem solvers are welcome with open arms. And welcome back to Throttle Up. Again, I am Captain Kevin Smith, and I am your host of this radio show and podcast. So now this is a continuation of our special editions of Throttle Up. And we're calling these special editions Succeeding in Trump's America. And there's good reason why we're doing this. We're doing it for a number of reasons. One is that often this information is underreported or even not reported in any meaningful way because for, I guess because it's not sensational enough, I don't know. It's strange of what is being discussed in this country, although there is some undercurrents or discussions that are occurring, what I would call under the radar. These are under the radar communications. And, you know, a lot of them are being presented by citizen journalists. More and more folks are getting involved in doing something journalistically. And I think that's good because I think that the self-appointed spokespeople for this country are all coming from a particular agenda. And in many cases, it's not productive. It is supporting something that is self-serving rather than good for the country. And it really doesn't make America great in any way. All right, so this is a special edition. And the special edition is like I said, is succeeding in Trump's America. And basically what I'm talking about here in this series, and I think this is number three in the series, and it'll probably be more I suspect it'll be either four or five episodes that represent this series. And the reason why we do this, you know, I've said this in the past, the reason why we do series like this, special editions, is they bear repeating. They are something that that is basically more or less timeless. You know, there it is important. While there is some, sure, there is some aspects of it that that, you know, represent what's going on in the here and now, but they also have a timeless quality to them, and they can be thought of as, you know, as things that have a long life cycle or a longer life cycle than what you would think of coming from a talk radio show. And, you know, that's what Throttle Up is all about. Throttle Up is about things that matter. Things that can be helpful to all of us, things that that have, like I said, have a long or longer life cycle than what you would typically hear on talk radio. And so that's the whole idea behind these special editions. All right, so now, what I'm going to do this week, we're continuing our discussion of succeeding in Trump's America. Now, what basically do I mean by that? All right, so to succeed in Trump's America simply means this. The economic engine that we can say is representative of the American economic system, the economic engine is revving up and it's moving along very nicely at a fairly decent clip. I would say it's moving quickly or it's moving at high speed. And so because the economic engine is working well, it's firing on all cylinders, it is moving forward rather nicely and effectively. And this opens up many, many opportunities for all of us You know, for me, at in my stage of life, it opens up opportunities in the area of information, in the area of media, if you will, things like books, articles, videos, podcasts, you name it. Those kinds of things are more and more available for those of you who are working, involved in earning a living. There's enormous opportunities here. Not only if you wanted to go off on your own to engage in a startup, start your own company, but also if you are in an organization to start up a new division or to start a new initiative, because there are enormous opportunities and there is economic wherewithal to do such. There's lots of startup capital. There's lots of funding available within each organization that is producing something useful and productive and getting paid for it. So all of these things represent some amazing opportunities. Also, on the public side of things, also there are major opportunities in the area of infrastructure design, proposing new infrastructure projects, initiating and seeing these projects to completion. That's an exciting side of the business. Also in the military, there are lots of exciting things are happening in the military with this new funding and additional funding and emphasis that the military is placing on training and readiness. These open up all kinds of opportunities for innovation to find a home. All right. Now, in part one of this special series or this this show that we're doing today, part one is about critical thinking, and it's a continuing discussion. As you remember, the show typically is organized into three parts. Part one deals with our continuing discussion of critical thinking and its various aspects and ramifications. Part two deals with, part two is what we call our storyboard, and it's a story of America, story of Americans. It's a story of something, and so it represents something. And it could be a story related to part one, and it could be a story of things that have happened in my life. It could be a story. Stories are powerful. Stories are more and more coming into vogue to present oneself in terms of a story or a storyline is a very powerful way to put forward an idea, a proposal, or a proposition. And then in part three of Throttle Up is our radio essay, and there we talk about things a little bit more in depth. But we are now going to talk about critical thinking, and this is sort of like a segue into this this whole notion of succeeding in Trump's America. What does it mean for us, and how can we let's say capitalize, or how can we benefit from this new economic reality? Okay, now here is a really interesting article in the Wall Street Journal, October 30th, and it's in the R section of the Wall Street Journal, and it's an R1. And it's an article written by a gentleman by the name of Robert Sutton, the title of it is "The Biggest Mistakes Bosses Make When Making Decisions." All right, so here we're going to be talking about decision making. Now, decision making is a very important part of this whole critical thinking paradigm. Extremely important. critical thinking. As you know, we have talked about critical thinking and its other related attributes that deal with reasoning. In Throttle Up, we talk about high-velocity reason. High-velocity reason is something that, you know, comes out of the field of aviation, but it's more and more applicable now during this rapidly changing economic landscape. We have to be able to think effectively, but we also have to be able to think quickly. We cannot dither. We cannot delay. We have to be decisive. We have to be quick. We have to be agile. Agility and adaptability are two big, big key words here, right? We have to be agile and adaptive. Our organizations have to be agile and adaptive. We, as individuals, as thinking mechanisms, we have to be agile and adaptive. So another key thing to remember is that with respect to all of that, we have to be able to deal with events. We have to be event-driven. We have to be an event-responsive mechanism or system. And I call it the ability to respond in an agile way to encountered events. So agile responsiveness to encountered events is extremely important. All right, so we talk about decision-making, which is part of this critical thinking idea. The article starts off like this. It almost goes without saying that decision-making is one of the most crucial aspects of leadership. And of course, I would say so, for sure. Goes on to say that, but here's the surprising part. Research shows that how bosses make decisions is just as important as what decisions they make. Now, of course, that comes right out of what I just read, comes right out of Critical Thinking 101. Critical Thinking 101 basically asserts or proposes or puts forth this proposition that what is most important in life is not what you think, but how you think. And that is key. Now, keep that in mind as we, in whatever we do, in whatever I do here on this radio show and podcast, whatever I do, consider how things are understood. How do you know such and such a thing? How is it that you have come to this belief? How is it that you have come to this conclusion? Those are the kinds of things that we as critical thinkers need to always keep in mind. It's the how, not the what. Okay, so how do bosses make decisions? This article goes on to say that if you do it right and you have employees who are more satisfied with their jobs and bosses do better work and feel more committed to their companies. Okay, fine. Do it wrong, and you have employees who are frustrated, resentful, angry, and confused, and of course, less productive. Unfortunately, it says that too many bosses do it wrong. Where do decision-making processes go awry? And how can bosses make it right? And the author goes on to say that here are four ways that bosses trip themselves up. Way number one, bosses who only pretend that employees have influence. Goes on to say that good decision-making entails consulting key stakeholders, of course, that goes without saying, I would say, and then using their input to shape final choices. Doing so, it says, improves the quality of decisions and makes employees more motivated to implement them. But he goes on to say, too often, the consultation of others is a sham. It looks like the real thing, but bosses are just pretending that others' inputs have some influence over the final decision. Now, I would say parenthetically here that this is another glaring example of what we call in critical thinking cognitive bias. Obviously, there is a bias to do something a certain way, and there is cover. Cover is being provided to make it appear that it is objective, and it is not. It is biased for whatever reason. All right, so avoid cognitive bias in everything that you do. Stay objective. Objective is its own. Actually, it's its own discipline now. You can check into that. The Ayn Rand Institute deals with matters that are objective, or it's called objectivism. Okay, let me continue with this article. Some leaders use sham participation in hopes of fooling powerless but useful people who will rubber stamp the decision and work hard to implement it. Others see sham participation as a necessary, if hollow, ritual. Given traditions and procedures, they do it because that's how things have always been done. And some leaders believe that even when people realize their ideas don't count, the mere opportunity to voice opinions somehow makes them feel better about their leaders and organizations. Yet, it says, research suggests that sham participation contains many of the elements, including deception, disrespect, and lack of influence over the decisions that end up discouraging and demotivating employees. All right, so that's something that we, you know, it's pretty clear here. I mean, this is like, you know, this is also morality 101 as well as critical thinking 101. There is no excuse for not employing integrity or using integrity in terms of as a guideline in everything that we do. So integrity is the key here, and we want to be people of integrity. That's what we want. We want that for our organizations and well. We don't want to be deceptive. We don't want to tell the customer such and such and not really being able to deliver, but to fool the customer into buying our product instead of having the customer come to us and asking us to sell. In other words, you know, turn the tables, you know, create something and have that reputation of trust so that the customer comes to you. You know, you say, why is the customer coming to me? The customer is coming to me because they know that I'm going to be truthful. They know that we are an organization that operates within a strict moral code. We are people of integrity. And the customer knows that. That's our reputation in the marketplace. And the customer is going to come to us. Now you say, well, isn't it that they're going to come to you because you're selling some kind of gadget or widget or some kind of piece of technology, and that you're a high-tech company that is a leader in the technological sphere? And I would say that by and large, that is a very popular position within the business community. But I would say that that's wrong. And I would say that it's seriously wrong, because more and more companies are realizing that they have got to address themselves to total customer satisfaction. If they don't address themselves to total customer satisfaction, they are going to be left behind. The move out there in the business community. And if you haven't seen this, I guess you haven't been paying attention because it is all over. Now, it is a little bit below the radar because of all of the political silliness going on, but nevertheless, within the business community, total customer satisfaction is the driving principle right now. That's the main driver. And how do you achieve that? The first way you achieve total customer satisfaction is developing this bond of trust between the provider and the customer. This bond of trust has got to be unshakable. The bond of trust is that you will never deceive me, you will always be truthful, and if your product will not solve my problem or support my business operation in a very positive way, then you will say so, and you will either find me a competitor's product, or you will tell me that you cannot help me, and that the solution that exists within the context of this problem solving initiative, the solution, it will not be able to come from us. Okay, let me continue with this. It says bosses who don't know when to slow down. Okay, the conventional wisdom suggests that paralysis by analysis plagues many companies, fueled by bad leaders who suffer from indecision and procrastination. The best leaders make most decisions fast. Employees like working with bosses who are confident in their craft and don't waste time. But employees also know that some decisions require more careful thought, especially risky, important, and complicated ones that are costly. In such cases, when bosses make a snap decision, okay, so what, and this is, of course, this goes right back to decision-making 101. This goes right back to Kahneman's book, Thinking Fast and Slow, if you've read that. I would recommend reading a summary of the book. If you try to read the whole book, it's kind of dense and long-winded. So I would read there's a couple of really good summaries out there. But basically what we're talking about is that these snap or ad hoc decisions, right? So the ad hoc decision is a snap judgment, and it often is addressing itself to the symptom. Now, I would say that, you know, that we need to spend some quality time. I would not say that we need to slow things down. All right, I don't really like that. I'm a bit against that. But I believe we ought to spend some quality time on problem definition, or what I call problem clarification. We need to be able to clarify the actual. And in order for us to truly understand the problem, to comprehend the problem in a meaningful way, we need to spend a little bit of time on the front-end analysis, a little bit of time, some quality time on actually defining the problem. Okay, so this article goes on to say that wise bosses know when it is time to slow things down, or what I would say here is that wise bosses know when it is time to seriously consider things that deal with problem definition. What exactly is the problem? Now, as you know, that we talked about this before, and I guess this is really important, because if we encounter a complex problem, all right, a complex problem that is mission critical is also called a wicked problem. This term has been around for some time, not well known, but a wicked problem is one that is seriously complex, but it needs to be solved. it's something that is that's seriously affecting the operation or the mission. And so it has this looming negative effect over the operation or the mission. It could be the business operation or the military operation. It doesn't matter, but it is in fact a wicked problem. And so wicked problems have this rather strange characteristic, which is that the problem that we think we know, understand, could very well be a symptom of a much higher order problem. And if we try to deal with the symptom of a higher order problem, we are not going to find a effective solution. That's as simple as that. And so we have to be very careful, and we do have to spend some quality time on the problem clarification. Okay, this goes on to say that he said that this article goes on to say this. He's talking about the CEO. Wise bosses know when it's time to slow down. I interviewed a former CEO who was hired to turn around a troubled mining and energy company. This company hadn't had a CEO for nearly a year. Earnings had plummeted and several recent major projects had failed. He said that when you take over a struggling company, everybody wants you to do something. So the first thing you say very calmly is, "We're not going to do anything today." Rather than acting in haste, he wrote up a top 80. He wrote the top 80 people in the company and asked each for a 2-page memo that explained 1, who are you? 2, which issues do you believe are most pressing? And 3, what would you do if you were me? He then met with each for at least an hour to discuss his or her memo. Afterwards, the CEO crafted an 80-page charter that stated the company's strategy and set forth its values, goals, and path to success. Then he began making big decisions, including closing a plant that was losing $10 million a month and selling peripheral businesses. Because this boss made good decisions, and he made them in ways that bolstered company employee commitment to these difficult choices, the company soon bounced back. After a loss of more than $1 billion the year before he took charge, within a couple of years, it was posting over $1 billion a year in profits. Okay, so that's a really good example of spending some quality time on problem definition, spending some quality time on clarifying the actual. And you might say, that's common knowledge, that's understood. Why do we have to, that's just good, basic, solid thinking. Why do we have to cloak it in these fancy terms? And I would say, all right, that's good, that's good common knowledge, that's basic, just solid, in-depth thinking. But often it's not done. Often we jump to conclusions. I mean, I have seen this in my life. I've been brought into many situations in which a solution was desperately needed, and the problem was spinning out of control. Many situations in my life, and so you can say I spent the majority of my professional life, and of course I still do this, but as a member of as an author and speaker, and doing other things, producing some videos and stuff like that. Problem solving, complex problem solving, was the thing that I was often involved with, and complex problem solving is a particularly interesting challenge. Now, I'm not going to say that it's any more difficult. I'm going to say that it requires one to engage in non-normal thinking. It requires one to consider things that are outside the box, to consider things that are not traditional or not conventional, because complex problems are entities, the long or short-lived entities that behave counterintuitively. That is, the plausible tends to be wrong, and that comes from J.W. Forster. And so to understand that, you know, that challenge, if you will, to understand that challenge, we have to be willing to adjust our thinking or to optimize our cognitive processes so that we can uncover something that is not obvious. We can define something that is somewhat difficult to define because it appears to be nebulous or does not announce itself in a clear way. We see a problem, or we detect an emerging situation that could evolve into a problem, but often the problem doesn't clearly announce itself. We have to find it. We have to locate it. We have to do proper diagnosis in order to find the actual problem. Okay, so that completes part one of this special edition. This is all on critical thinking within the context of succeeding in Trump's America. Now, in part two, we're going to take a short break here, and then we're going to come back in part two. We're going to be talking about Newt Gingrich's new book, Trump's America. We're going to be using that to discuss things about succeeding. How can we succeed in Trump's America? And what does that mean? And what's going on with respect to Trump's America from an economic standpoint? And these are good, solid things that we can consider as we go forward. And as we capitalize on these opportunities, these great economic opportunities that we have now before us, let's not get embroiled in the political silliness of the day. We know that the economy is moving forward. We know there are many, many opportunities for us to either succeed or to maintain our success or become even more successful. And so how are we going to do that? And that's the whole point of this. And so we're going to take a short break, and we will be right back with part two. Okay, welcome back to Throttle Up. And this is, of course, this is our special edition. Continuing our special edition, Succeeding in Trump's America. Now we have part two, it's our storyboard. And here we're going to be using as a reference, we're going to be using Newt Gingrich's new book called Trump's America, The Truth About Our Nation's Great Comeback. And so, and the reason we're doing this is because this all relates to this idea that we're putting forward is to become more successful. How can we succeed, or how can we become even more successful in our lives, in our business lives, in our personal lives, you name it. And there's lots of opportunities for us to do that. There's more opportunities now than probably that has ever existed in quite some time. You know, in my long life, I am reminded of other periods in the American economic history where there were similar opportunities, but this is a grand opportunity for all of us. So, Trump's America. I'm going to read some excerpts. So, there's going to be some excerpts and commentaries, which is, you know, and you know, that's my style. My style is to read some things if I find them to be important and meaningful, and to bring some other ideas into this marketplace of ideas that we call Throttle Up, but also to make some comments. But these are my, some of these are my comments, and you know, you need to make your own, draw your own conclusions. Remember, the most important thing that we talked about earlier on this show, it's not what you think, but how you think. How do you think? How do you come to that position? How do you go about solving problems? How, not what. And so everything is about how. How do you do things? How should they be done? And stuff like that. Chapter 6 of this book is called The Comeback of the American Economy, Part 1, Cutting Red Tape. It goes on to start, it starts out by saying this, the bureaucracy is the anti-Trump coalition's favorite weapon. From the left, it is the primary vehicle through which to subvert the will of the people by using regulations to control almost every aspect of our lives. For members of the economic and political establishment, the regulations which the bureaucracy creates and enforces are an important tool for gaining market share and amassing power. Corporate interests use their lobbying muscles to create regulations that shut out their competitors, usually smaller startup companies that cannot afford the lobbyists. Likewise, for members of the political establishment, the ability to manipulate regulations on behalf of their donors keeps a steady stream of campaign cash flowing in. It goes on to say that Trump's America, on the other hand, represents an omnipresent government in their lives, micromanaging small business owners with job-killing regulations and trying to impose weird liberal values on ordinary Americans. And that's what, in other words, that's what Trump's America sees in this regulation pit. Plus, it says, many members of Trump's America are hurting economically. They are victims of jobs going overseas and the slow economic growth of the Obama administration following the 2008 recession. They cheer any step which will create jobs and spur economic growth. Fortunately for Trump's America, when it comes to repealing regulations and reducing the power of the bureaucracy, the president has delivered big league, as he would say. The deregulatory effort led by President Trump is jaw-dropping and historic, and a key reason why the economy boomed in his first year, even before the tax cut was passed. Newt goes on to say that if you want to understand the truth about America's comeback in job creation and economic growth, you need to understand how bad the regulatory state has become and the scale of the president's efforts to review and roll back job-killing, expensive federal regulations. Okay, so now again, Newt goes on to say things and discuss things about this regulatory quagmire that has existed up until recently, and how Trump is dismantling the regulatory apparatus, and how this is opening up many economic opportunities, particularly in the area of the small and medium-sized businesses that cannot afford these armies of lawyers to protect them from onerous regulations, and they pretty much fall prey to the regulatory monster. Now, Newt goes on to say that a daunting task As soon as President Trump took office, he began his aggressive campaign to cut red tape in Washington. This was no easy feat. At the end of 2016, just before President Trump was inaugurated, the Code of Federal Regulations, which included all final rules published by the government, contained 185,000 pages in 242-bound volumes, including a 1,170-page appendix. This figure is up from only 22,000 pages in 1960, or a more than 700% increase over 56 years. And so here we are talking about this enormous economic monster, regulatory monster that is stifling economic activity. But more important, you know, from my perspective, is innovation. You know that innovation and Newt and others have been promoting this idea that innovation ought to be or is a national agenda item. I would propose that innovation is in fact a national agenda item and pursue with that idea. And so one of the killers of innovation, not the only one, but one of the killers of innovation is regulation. So a regulation nation is not one that will innovate. We want to install, or we want to have with us, an innovation nation. We want America to be first and foremost a innovation nation. Now, I when I say that, I'm saying that from an economic standpoint. I think America first and foremost should stand for doing the right thing. America is a moral nation. America should stand for morality and integrity, first and foremost. Those are the superordinate functional aspects, in my view, and I think in many people's view, those are the first and foremost functional aspects of America. Economically, I think the first thing at the top of the list is innovation. America needs to be and continues to be, and it needs to even be more so, a innovation nation. Innovation should be and should be at the forefront of everything that we do, everything that we think about, everything that, and even in our daily lives. How can we do this better? Is this the right way to do it? Is this the best way to do it? How is it that we have come to this position in our daily lives or in our business or whatever? How is it? And how should it be done? What is the optimum? How do we know if this is the optimum way to do it? And if it is not, or if it is questionable, how can we figure out the precise and the optimum pathway forward? All right. So Newt goes on to say that the increase in regulations, and specifically restrictive ones, matters because this huge spike in government control and rulemaking across American industry is choking out innovation and making it harder for businesses to grow, create jobs, and provide opportunities for Americans. Indeed, there is a place in our society for reasonable regulations. No one wants toxic, lead-laden drinking water. No company in America should be able to exploit child workers. However, when regulations go too far or are poorly written, they add tremendous cost to U.S. businesses. For example, the Environmental Protection Agency determined in 2015 that dust, which comes off gravel roads or recently tilled fields, was dangerous particulate matter. That is the same pollutant clarification it gives to coal ash or soot. This meant farmers had to start spreading their time and or spending their time and money not growing crops, but mitigating the dust that could potentially come off the natural land. Another example, on June 19, 2017, days before President Trump was inaugurated, the Department of Energy under President Obama published a rule that required ceiling fans to be more energy efficient. This 62-page rule will do little more than make new ceiling fans more expensive. Republicans have been fighting the Obama administration's ceiling fan rule since 2013. Okay, so here we are talking about, you know, unleashing the power of the American economy, the power of the American style economic engine, and that's what we're talking about, and this is what that Newt is discussing, those unnecessary impediments to the continuous improvement in the area of innovation and creativity, and how innovation and creativity is the fuel for our economic engine, how we can unleash this potential, this great potential. Now, you know, we can talk about all of this stuff from an economic standpoint, but really it's the human potential. We're talking about the humans that make up America, the Americans, the great Americans, and unleash their potential to do great things. And that's what America can do. America can do great things. America has that potential to do great things. Now, there's probably lots of reasons, and I'm not considering myself to be an expert in this field. And there's probably lots of philosophers that can explain it better than I can. But I will tell you that, you know, that the greatness of America is the mind of its people. The mind of its people. Its people are innovative. They're independent thinkers. They think outside the box. They're not afraid to think outside the box. And that's what creates value. That's what creates prosperity. That's what creates well-being, is that capability. You know, once we have that potential, let's use it. Let's use it to benefit all of us, you know, across the country and across the globe. Let us use that potential and let us improve the lives across the board. Now, from a business standpoint, we can look at it in terms of improving the business life of our customers. What can we do to improve our performance with respect to our customers? How can we help our customers succeed? How can we do that? Total customer satisfaction. How can we bring that about? And that is the key to our success. And let's start there. Let's all start there. Look at it from that perspective. Total customer satisfaction is where we start. And then we go from there. And we go down layers down and get more specific in terms of lower layers of abstraction. We can do that, and we'll do that as we continue this series. It looks like I'm at the end of the show for this week. We do have some closing remarks, and we will then see you all next week. Throttle Up. And before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here, and I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service. And I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and the Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye. And we will see you all again next week.